This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to The Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting for financial security for our seniors. Find out more at carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. Can artificial intelligence companions ease the crisis in elder care? We'll meet Viv, who offers conversation and compassion at a seniors facility in Sydney. And a book by Time correspondent Simon Schuster traces the transformation of Volodymyr Zelensky from actor to wartime leader. We'll talk about The Showman. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. The look of many pension plans in Canada is changing. According to a Bank of Montreal survey, foreign investors are increasingly pulling out of Canada. Homegrown plans are also looking elsewhere, investing more in China than in Canadian public companies. 40 years ago, up to 90% of Canadian pension funds were committed to investments in this country. Today, that figure has dropped to 25%. Wegovy, another one of those blockbuster weight loss drugs, has now been approved to reduce the risk of heart attacks and strokes. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration based the approval on a study of over 17,000 people. 8% took a placebo and had a cardiac event, compared with 6.5% who were on Wegovy. Semaglutide drugs like Wegovy and Ozempic were originally approved for type 2 diabetes, but their effectiveness for weight loss caused a huge spike in demand and shortages, which are expected to worsen with this latest approval. Fashion Week in Paris is embracing older models. According to the fashion search engine Tagwalk, roughly three-quarters of the 20 runway shows in Paris and Milan featured at least one older model. At Balmain, almost half of the 57 women who strutted down the catwalk were over the age of 35. The creative director says, given the ages of many of his clients, he wanted to recognize those who actually buy his clothes. He was called the man in the iron lung. Paul Alexander of Texas, who contracted polio in 1952 at the age of six and used an iron lung for most of his life, has died. Alexander didn't let his circumstances quell his determination to live a full life. He painted, wrote a book, worked as a lawyer, and in recent years became a hit on TikTok. Before Jonas Silk developed the vaccine in 1955, polio epidemics had been growing, mostly affecting children, with many confined to an iron lung in order to breathe. Alexander was 78 years old. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. This week, the National Institute on Aging released a report on how government can improve the organization and delivery of long-term care. Meanwhile, it's technology that has offered one solution for people like Catherine Fee, an Australian woman living with dementia.
You've got to get something that keeps the old brain going. That's important.
She's sharing that thought with her new friend, Viv, who is an AI-generated companion.
Thank you for sharing that sentiment, my dear. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to connect. Remember, I'm always here if you need someone to talk to.
Is this the future? I talked with Dr. Adriana Schnall, program director of the Kaschitsky Center for Innovations in Caregiving at Baycrest.
AI is not just the future, it's the present, and we'll see more of it in the future.
How is it the present? How is it being used?
There's a lot of uptake of AI and embedding AI technology into care, into healthcare, and in particular to care of older adults and people living with dementia. not just for companionship, but also around safety in the home, around support in long-term care facilities, and improving quality of life, or we hope it's improving quality of life. And as much as there's a lot of work happening, the research in this to see is it actually really making a difference, is that what's new or newer?
So how exactly is it being used? We're just seeing this AI companion. So to improve safety in the home, is it a robot or a screen? How is it working?
So it depends. In terms of companions, if we use the idea of a robot as a companion, there's some that look like a lamp kind of that sit on a desk. There's some that are on an iPad, and there may be an avatar that speaks to people. There's some of them are through the phone. So it really, there's a great variety. Some are like, they look like pets, like a cat or a dog, like a stuffed animal.
In terms of the people using it, people with dementia, do they know how to use the computer or a lamp that's actually AI? How does that work for them?
So it depends on how the system works. So some of them, you just can start talking to them and it starts interacting. Some of them, somebody has to set it up and turn it on at some point. The technology is not the barrier necessarily. It's more the ability to communicate with it. But these systems that are built and created for people living with dementia are easy to use. And so you can just start talking to it. And it picks up on your tone, your emotion. It's responsive to the questions you ask. But there, at some point, somebody has to be there to turn it on and get it set up.
I have to admit, it creeps me out a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it mean for human interaction?
So there's a whole ethical question that comes with it. And of course, this is where we need to be put safeguards around how we're going to use all this technology moving forward. And it should not be instead of people, but as an adjunct to people's relationships with their families, their friends, and their care providers. A lot of people are lonely. I mean, and you look at long-term care facilities, and there are a lot of hours that go by where people are sitting by themselves. And so as creepy as this may sound, it is better to have some sort of interaction than no interaction at all. And it's no different when I think of putting children in front of a TV as opposed to playing with children and reading with children. And by no means I want to equate older adults with children. But we've been doing this with children a lot longer than we've been doing it with older adults. And nobody will say, well, it's better for your child to be sitting in front of a TV. This is in many ways no different.
What does it do, though, to expectations about human relationships? I mean, the AI companion that we saw, Viv, I mean, she's always sympathetic and lovely and interested, and people aren't.
It raises the bar, doesn't it, in terms of how we manage relationships. But it's impossible for humans to react this way because we have emotions. When a partner asks us something 20 times and we lose it, we lose it because we're frustrated, because we're angry. We're angry at the person for having this illness. And, you know, it doesn't make sense that we're angry at the person. They didn't wish it upon themselves. We're angry at life sometimes that I can't believe this is what our relationships become. And so we lash out or we say, you've asked me already 20 times, leave me alone. That's the beauty of machines and robots, that they don't have that piece. They can tell you the same thing 1,000 times and be nice and polite and caring and empathic. And that's where we should use it as a benefit to us, because we cannot, as humans, do this.
Dr. Adriana Schnall, thank you so much.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Dr. Adriana Schnall, Program Director of the Kaschitzky Center for Innovations in Caregiving at Baycrest. I'm Libby Zimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, an intimate portrait of President Volodymyr Zelensky and his journey from the dressing rooms of his variety shows to the front lines of Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, Canada's largest and most influential association fighting for the interests of Canadians as we age. Find out more at carp.ca.
He's evolved from his role as a comedic actor to become an iconic wartime leader. Since becoming president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky has had an outsized presence on the world stage, fighting for the future of his country. The showman charts his personal transformation. I spoke with author Simon Schuster.
One thing that I try to show in the book is how the toolkit of skills that he developed as a showman, as an entertainer, have served him very well in waging this war, especially on the diplomatic front, when it came to grabbing and holding the world's attention for as long as he has, and convincing all of us, much of the democratic world, that this cause that he's fighting for, that all Ukrainians are fighting for, is also our cause. So yes, his skills as a showman really are at the center of the book, and I think at the center of his approach to leadership. A wartime commander, right around that time, in the first days of the invasion, when he was putting out these selfie videos of himself and some of his allies, just to demonstrate that he had not run away, he had not fled, even though the risks to him and to other senior officials in Ukraine were immediate and very grave. I mean, he was under imminent risk of death.
But it wasn't the first time. Right after he was elected, Donald Trump asked him to, quote, do him a favor, and Zelensky said no to investigating Joe Biden and Hunter Biden.
Yeah, that also showed some gumption, for sure. Now, that was a kind of initial trial by fire for Zelensky, who at that point had basically no experience in diplomacy or politics, maybe a few months' experience. So that was a really tough one, and he did go through that experience before the eyes of the world.
So where does he get this from? Is this courage something he always had, or was it because as an actor he sort of faked it until he made it? What is it, in your opinion?
Well, he does. One of the character traits that is pretty consistent throughout his life, even when I went back and looked at his early career in entertainment and comedy, he has this very deep confidence in himself. And he sometimes pushes his team, the team he works with, the team of comedians, for example, earlier in his career, his group of friends, he pushes them to try impossible things, to take on impossible challenges. That confidence has been with him throughout. You might call it hubris in some cases. In some cases, it has gotten him into trouble, for sure. But it is a very consistent dimension of his character.
And in terms of his personality, how has the war changed that?
Well, he certainly doesn't have or leave as much time in his day-to-day interactions with people for joking and banter and small talk and things like that. He's much more direct, much more curt, I'd say a lot tougher. His team has become much more disciplined and smaller. So there isn't a lot of kind of brainstorming and lively debate. I think there is a kind of military discipline that has set in within his team, and he's very much the leader. And the people around him, some of them have been with him for many years, even from his time as an entertainer in the movie business. Some of them have been with him throughout those years, but now they no longer act like his buddies and his pals. They act like his employees.
What about his family, his wife, who seems to be a huge asset? She had to escape with the kids. How has that changed his relationship with his family?
Her transformation has been almost as stark and remarkable as his. She did not want him to go into politics. She did not want to be the first lady. She was perfectly happy with their life in show business, where she worked as his screenwriter, writing his jokes for him for many years. So it has been a very difficult transition for her, not only from the work of a comedy writer into politics, but now into the wartime administration. She has really stepped into the role of an international diplomat and someone who has taken on very important portfolios or tasks within the administrations.
At the beginning, all of the Western world was on side and Ukraine was having victories, but things have really bogged down. And there's a lot of evidence that the West, many of the countries in the West, are getting tired of supporting Ukraine. So how is that affecting him?
When I talked to Zelensky last fall, he said, "It feels like a wave of fatigue with the war is rolling across Europe and the United States." And he felt it was his mission, indeed it was his daily task, to try to head it off, to stop it, to convince the leaders of the world and foreign countries, the people in those countries, that Ukraine is winning, Ukraine has a chance, that it is proceeding toward its victory, and it needs international support. So he saw that as his main prerogative, his main goal, certainly on the diplomatic front, but he did admit that it is exhausting to constantly try to head off those feelings of dejection and war fatigue that inevitably set in.
Anything else you want to leave us with?
Well, don't count Ukraine out. I mean, I think there's a tendency among news consumers to sort of fall into the doom and gloom of what's been happening in the recent weeks or months. But I think what the book, I hope, will try to do for readers is remind people of the broader arc of this war, how it started, and why we all felt it was so important in the beginning, certainly, to support Ukraine and support President Zelensky. I think it's important to keep all those things in mind.
Simon Schuster, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Simon Schuster, author of The Showman. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Weekend Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Jeremy Logan, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. With technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer, Moses Neimer.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.